Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora and welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod here at Sky Sport and Rugby Pass. I'm Ross Carl. It's a big week this week, obviously. We've got the Blues and the Highlanders in the final. No Crusaders, which, yeah, some people might be a little bit happy about. What we've got in studio is James Parsons, former Blues player, and if that wasn't punishing enough, down south, we're bringing in Joey Wheeler so we can really get both sides of this argument. In the final, you played the 2015 one, Joey?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, certainly. Yeah, great day. Well, actually, a great day, the final, but it was actually the most enjoyable part was the sort of 5 to 7 days post the final, from what I can remember of that. That was the good fun. But, yeah. An interesting week not having the Crusaders in the final, but I'm sure the 4.5 million New Zealanders outside of the Canterbury region will be rapt that that's the case.
And speaking of that and the 5 to 7 days of activity afterwards, Bryn Hall is not here because there might be some activities going on all across above board.
He's a bit parched.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's a bit parched. he's rehydrating.
I've heard rumours that he pours them all down the sink anyway. He doesn't actually, the celebration sort of dodges it all, but talks a big bit.
Oh yeah, he's not a heavy hydrator, but he still enjoys himself.
I would say that's just good management.
Yeah,
you know, if you're in for the long haul.
Smart. He's a halfback. He's not a big body like 130 kilo lock from down south.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we've got to approach it maybe with a little bit more, I suppose, what do you call it? You
know, relativity.
You know, if you divide the amount of drinks by the amount of kegs and then you get to the end and there's your winner.
Yeah. Yeah. Joey still
wins. Good way of putting it. I've never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't allow you to get away with an absolute victory every single time, does it? You know, and you don't want that. Yeah, the big boys up
especially
front.
Especially not a halfback.
Yeah, yeah. And we really shouldn't be encouraging whatever it is we're encouraging right now. I don't think we've mentioned anything in particular, but we do have a final this week. We have the Blues versus the Landers. It's at Eden Park. Mate, after the game, you and JK were just straight fizzing. But you went ahead and said that the Highlanders are a good chance.
Oh, well, you got to pump it up, you know. Just probably Blues going in as underdogs. You reckon, Joey?
Oh, it's all out of your mouth, Javern. I heard that post-match summary from you and JK, and it was all, we this, we that, we're going to do this. We all know there's one underdog, and that's the boys from the Deep South coming up to what is going to be a sold-out Eden Park. I mean, the only thing I think it's probably going to maybe help the Landers is that they've had a lot more sort of finals, I guess, preparation or experience over the last years, because it's been a long time since the Blues team's been in a final. I think, racking my memory, it might go back to, an actual final. Would it be 98, maybe?
2003.
I don't know.
An actual final, 03.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
A semi
2011. But as you can see, just off the top of my tongue, it doesn't hurt at all. But I do think you're on a similar run to 15, you know, because you guys made that run away from home and it almost galvanised you and you built on that, and then it sort of sprung you into that away from home mentality, and you know, you sort of alluded to that there. But Look, I think the Blues are tracking well. I was a bit edgy with the second half, but the Force, like we've spoken on here about the Force, and they've done this except for the Canes game. They've run a possession territory stat ridiculous in the second half every game, pretty much. They were 70 possession, 72% territory on the weekend against the Blues. That was the same against the Crusaders, same against the Highlanders over there in Perth, and the same against the Chiefs. So it wasn't uncharacteristic to see that. Yes, the Blues would have been like to have been more clinical. They probably lacked the discipline on defence, which allowed the Force to get into their half, and I suppose the execution at line-out time. But those are areas they can fix up, but they'll need to fix them up against the Highlanders, because I don't know how bad Putty Parkinson is, but he looked like he was holding his shoulder walking off, but he's a bit of tall timber. Evans there, Dixon, so, you know, line-out's going to be a key factor to be able to play off.
Yeah. Talk to me about that Force stat, though. You know, is that a Blues problem, or is that a Force coming up with, you know, what is it that makes them so good in the second half?
I don't know. I spoke to Cole Goodwin after the game. He's good friends with Nick Mayhew, so I was catching up with them after the game, and he was saying it's frustrating to them because they perform so well in that second 40. And then, you know, they're like, why can't we just get that consistency? But potentially it's, you know, teams tire and they can get a little bit better and they work things out. I'm not too sure. They haven't been able to put their finger on it. But I must admit, probably not the first 10 minutes, but that 10 to 40 minutes was the best I've seen the Blues play defensively and their ability to turn defence into attack. I mean, that one example of Paddy hitting Kyle Godwin on the line at about the 20-minute mark, bang, smacked him, and then Jared Kelly-Tuioti just picks the ball up and steals it from the ruck. I mean, those are the defensive efforts you see. I think there was another kick from Finlay Christie and Hoskins Satutu and Kurt Eklund absolutely barrel the fullback and walk over the top of it to get another turnover. Yes, they scored points and there was some great synergy in attack, but it was the efforts in defence and turning that defence into the attack that was more special to me.
Is that a key worry for you, Joey?
Yeah, I think on the back of that, around that defensive stat, that's one area of the game that I've been really impressed in the growth of this Blues side. I think probably historically speaking, that's when it gets tough, that's when usually the Blues go missing. But for them to be leading this competition in amount of tackles average per game, they're at 19.2. And then to have the second best tackle percentage across the competition in 89.2% as well, or 89.6% I should say. They're doing something really, really well. And that's, I think, been built by probably the growth that we've seen from Super Rugby Aotearoa and the mistakes that they made in that competition, letting teams in and letting them off the hook late in the piece, to then actually growing their defensive belief and guys sort of responding to that and taking real pride and protecting their line. And that's the game that I've been really inspired. So for this Highlanders team to break them down, they need to be really smart in their attack, because these guys are big lads, and if you're going to run straight into them, they're going to knock you on your back and they're going to do it time and time again. So you need to be really smart in how you attack this Blues side to win.
And to be fair, that is the strength of the Highlanders this year. Clever ingenuity around attack, looking at the opposition game and coming up with options.
The irony is on that is the Highlanders' attack statistically doesn't read that well. They're quite low in clean breaks and defenders beaten, but it's because of exactly what you've just said. They go to their line out and they actually score a lot from mauls or from little set plays that we saw the other night. I think Harmon went over. And when they break the line, their conversion rate of line breaks to tries is huge. So they sit around 7 or 8th out of 10 in attack stats. Mm. But it's actually quite amazing reading, because if you actually looked into it, they actually average more tries than the Blues per game, but their attack stats don't read that. But that actually tells a better story. So they are really clinical on attack. When they make a line break, they normally score. But also it shows their best game is when they go to their forwards. They did the same when they were struggling against the Waratahs. They went to their forwards in the second half and it tidied everything up, both sides of the ball. They did it again against the Brumbies, and they used their kicking game really well around that. So they can score points. You know, on the back of Joey, I do think defence is going to be key in this game, and I think tactical kicking will also be key, and then this the penalty strategy. You know, we're talking about attack and thing, you know, we're so used to seeing so many points scored, but it's a Kiwi team versus a Kiwi team. What strategy changes? How do they apply those sorts of thoughts and mechanisms? And both sides are first and second in points allowed. I think the Blues are allowing 15 points defensively to the Highlanders 19. You know, so both sides are probably the best defensive side. So it's going to be who's willing to break, and then you sort of see both sides like to kick that territory base. Zane Sullivan's coming to the Blues. He's kicking long a lot. Mitch Hunt and Aaron Smith with Josh Iwani, they kicked 32 times the other night and were so patient and wanting to get five tries. To be that patient and kick that many times and just wait for it, wait for it, wait for it, and you know, make hay when the sun shines was pretty impressive. And no doubt they'll be looking to do the same again. So it's almost going to be a real chess match to see who makes the mistake first, or who chances their arm first on attack that provides the error for the other team to pounce on.
Joey, we've got a little red book
Chipper,
here.
I'll just go back to...
Yeah, go on, mate.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to go back to about 5 minutes on that chat and pick up on a point you said around the line-out, Chipper. And what I'm actually, obviously, being an ex-lock, is that I'm intrigued by this battle, because you did allude to the Highlanders' reliance on their line-out and their special plays that they offer, and they do that really well. What I've loved on the flip side of that is actually the Blues' defensive line-out this year. I think defensively, they're standing up. I'm not sure exactly the stat, but I'd say they'd be out there in the top three defensive line-outs. So they're picking
first.
A lot of ball off. So there you go, first. So the gut feel was pretty accurate, mate, on that one. So
I'm disappointed you didn't watch the pre-show on the weekend, mate.
Oh yeah, but that's bath time duties in our house.
Yeah, true. True, understandable.
But yeah, the lineup battle is going to be intriguing, because you're right, the Highlanders do love to attack off that, and I think if they can manipulate that Blues defensive line out, then I think they could get some pay at mall time, because I think the Blues have shown some frailties in that area, and if the Highlanders can be smart and manipulate them into where they want to go, then that could great wee battle.
Yeah, and I think it will be a battle because of the variation the Highlanders have shown, because it's, you know what it's like, Joey, is that commitment in, oh, is it going to be a maul? Is it going to be a special play? And you can't be halfway house. It's either head in or head out. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's where those opportunities present itself. And back to that defensive, Gerard Kelly, Tuioti and Patrick Tupulotu, those have been the biggest growth in their game. They're equal top in terms of steals as individuals, which has made the Blues the top line-out steals. But the biggest thing out of those steals, they're scoring points off the back of it, finally. So off those steals, we're so used to seeing the Crusaders, the Whitelocks, the Barretts, the Luke Romanos leading those sorts of stats. To see the Blues in that space shows a massive growth. And we all know, like the old adage, defence wins championships. It's true, because when the pressure comes down to it and you're defending your line, you know, 70 to 80 minutes, that's when it's going to count the most. And I think where the Highlanders won themselves into this final, and similar for the Blues, is defence. The Highlanders, 70 minutes to 80 minutes, holding the Brumbies out was probably the most important part of the game, because they didn't score a try and they got the bonus point. Mm. You know, and it's, again, based off the back of defence. The same for the Blues, is holding out the force at crucial times in that first half and then scoring points off the back of it paid massive dividends, because we didn't see what was coming in the second half. So both teams, defence, but we know they can both attack. So it's who's going to chance their arm. Mm. Because you don't also want to make the error that allows the other side to pounce. So it's just that balance.
You alluded to it a little earlier. You know, these teams obviously haven't played each other in a while. They've been playing Australian teams and they haven't played against the New Zealand style. So you come into a final like this. What does this final mean in comparison to, say, the Super Rugby Aotearoa final? When you look at the fact that the top five teams you haven't played, and you're now in a final against one of the other teams who has put on the most points and won the points differential battle that this competition turned into. Joey, what does this mean, this tournament?
I think it's huge for both I think from a Highlanders perspective, obviously, where they've come from this season, from obviously finishing fourth in Super Rugby Aotearoa to then go 5 from 5, but also face the adversity that they've faced. They've had 13 guys out from their original squad out with ending injuries. Some individuals have had off-field indiscretions that have really cost the teams in a couple of games this year. And then to only have two current ABs in the squad, it's an unbelievable effort by this team to be in this situation. I know people are going to say, well, you haven't played the Crusaders. It's, you know, how can you actually to be champions because you haven't actually taken the 5-time champions or whatever they are. But I think to be in that position, everyone knew the rules. It was a points race. To be able to compile enough bonus points and enough points to be in this position to be in a final, I think both these two teams should be really proud of their efforts because it's been a points race. You have been really, really sound defensively, but you've also had to have the ability to score tries. And our performance last week by the Highlanders in Canberra, where over the history of Super Rugby, against new sides, they only let in on average 23 points. So for the Highlanders to go over there, a hell of a travel schedule that they've had this season, was an outstanding effort to put themselves in with a sniff up at Eden Park this weekend. Sorry.
That's what I mean. They're doing this 2015. It's the same story was coming out of the camp at 2015. The old backs against the wall. See, that's Blues are underdogs, mate. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Highlanders have got the finals Blues experience.
Joey said it.
Joey said it. You know, they've galvanised, you know.
Brenner always claims underdog status, so someone had to take over from him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the Crusaders can never claim underdog status. When you've got 13 characters on the books, there's just no way you can claim underdog status.
Well, the champions are doing that as well.
Yeah, well, they are. I mean, to answer your question for the Blues, I think we all know what it means to this team and this city. I mean, we get ridiculed, and I will say we this week, because it looks like it is you versus me, not only here today, but on Saturday, no doubt. But it will mean a lot to the group, but also to the city, and I hope we get a packed house, because there's been a lot of grief. And rightly so. We haven't made a final. We haven't made finals for a long time, since 2011. But we're here, home final, finally. So get them behind and celebrate it. And no doubt the boys will be putting in a big shift to make sure we get the rewards.
There have been some moments at Eden Park recently. I suppose there was that return game last year, which was a sellout. And when Auckland won that final and they gave away all those tickets, you know. This, though, is bigger. This is the real thing.
It's huge, yeah. I think it is massive, and I agree with Joe. Like, well, for you guys, you did beat the Crusaders at home, so you know, you've done it, and we've played each other enough Kiwi sides to know that, you know, it's a pretty evenly balanced comp. Mm. And you know, the best two sides in the Trans-Tasman got enough points, and the trophy's up for grabs. And I don't even think the Crusaders would sit there and say that the two teams don't deserve to be there. I don't think that's their style. You know, Bryn Hall text on our chat, you know, couldn't get the job done, all the best to the Blues and the Highlanders, you know. So I don't think it's their style, and they're happy to celebrate what was an awesome Super Rugby Aotearoa for them and let the final go ahead on Saturday.
Wasn't that a bizarre game? I watching that Crusaders game, you know, they were up early. It was obvious they were never going to lose. But every time they got up to 19 points up, it went back and it went back and it went back. And then we had drop balls, you know, when no one was around them. Richie Mwonga, you know, missing touch. Like all these weird things that in pressure situations, in finals, we've seen them be able to achieve. And in this particular situation, it was strange because they won by 50 points and yet they bottled it.
It just didn't feel like it was going to be their day, I reckon, when Enor dropped that one before halftime. Like, it was like, I was watching it with Goldie and JK, and it was just like, man, you just almost felt like it wasn't on. And then Tamaiti Williams with the reach out, and then Fayanuku's double movement. Mm. I think, you know, the McLeod injury early without Dave Havili there, all those sorts of things add up. And you can be a world-class team, which they are, but 33 points is a lot. Like, it's a big effort, yeah, and it has to go credit to the Highlanders to make it that sort of margin.
But they should have done it. Like, they had the opportunities.
I think it was the yellow card.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think, Joe, but Will Jordan's yellow card, it stemmed the flow at 24.
Yeah, it did. And I think what we witnessed was a when they were uncomfortable, when they go away from what they do well, which is that juggernaut of set-piece penalty, kick, another penalty, keep doing that. They went away from that and they start trying to play this Razzley game, which doesn't really suit their style. It's not in their DNA. That structured, disciplined football that we're so used to seeing from them sort of disappears out the window. And we saw the pressure that they obviously were putting on themselves to make that happen. But what they'll be kicking themselves about this season and missing out is performed home games this year. So against the Brown one, they win by the skin of their teeth in the last play by that guy missing the conversion. So they win by 2 points, don't take a bonus point. In the fourth away, the bonus point in the 81st minute or something of that game to not get a bonus point. So from the two games that they had at home this year, they didn't take away the bonus point. Got the wins, obviously, because they finished the season 5-5. They'll be kicking themselves that they didn't get bonus points at home, which is so, so crucial in this competition.
I think it's also they won't be kicking themselves about their attack. It'll be that they weren't stopping tries. You know, like, to score 52 points and not get a bonus point, that it'll be the 26 that irritates them the most, I'd say, because they still tackled at 89%. So, you know, they're just probably like one-off individual errors, like when Joe Powell slipped through defensively that led to tries. It wasn't like they were massive breakdowns in defence that led to those four tries by the Rebels. So I think it will be more the other side of the ball that irritates them the most, because you know that on attack they're second to none.
Mm. Well, they'd have to say by themselves, though, as well, and Bryn's talked about this a lot, their discipline has let them down all season. There have been a number of points that haven't been major issues for them in the past. They've managed to get over it and somehow get a little bit further. But as the season's gone on, obviously that hasn't.
Well, they still won five games. We've got to make sure we don't blow it up to something bigger than it. It's not like they only missed out by a couple of points and points differential. It's just because it's the standards that everyone expects of them. So, you know, and I think they'll be more irritated by, you know, the tries they let in than the ones they missed, you know. But you're right, again, 14 penalties, 16 turnovers, those are sort of stats that probably irritate them as well, because of the high standards that Joey alluded to before that they used to sort of implementing and showing.
Joey, it really is a compliment to them that we talk about them in this way, the way that we talk about the All Blacks. You know, when you've got that legacy of such huge
five titles
success,
in a row,
you know, people pick at the tiniest, most minute details when you've actually done pretty bloody well.
Yeah, I think we all love to hate the Crusaders. They're just so good. It's just jealously, personally, on the weekend, I was getting so frustrated at the Rebels, the way they were playing. I was like, all you guys need to tackle, just tackle, man. Don't worry about anything else. Just try and tackle these guys. But it was like they were wanting them to win. But I look at them and I go, they are so good across the park. They've obviously got an amazing culture there that want to keep turning back up for them year after year. Even those guys that are fringe All Blacks, that they would, you know, walk into any other super franchise in the country and play 80 minutes every week. They still want to stay there to get better as rugby players. And that's a credit to them and what they do there, because they do it better than anyone else. They are world-class in that respect, that they breed success. And, I mean, even though they went 5-5, they'll be bitterly disappointed. And Chibba said, I think it came down to a couple of real small things in their game that we're going through with a fine-tooth comb around discipline, chasing games, not being able to probably score the amount of points that we're used to at home, all the little things. But The reality is they still won 5 from 5, so they were still a bloody good side.
It's not the end of the world. And it makes the final far more interesting because we all just expect the Crusaders to turn up and win finals. And this time around, it is honestly a who is going to win this game.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot closer. I genuinely think that. Like, it's both teams are in really good touch and time their run really well. I do want to jump on the back of Joey's comment around the Rebels' defence because, you know, we had that chat about Mwanga going out the back and breaking defence. He did it again on the weekend. Joe Powell rushed in and jammed on the tip defender and Mwanga goes through again. And I'm just like, how do they not know
don't
he's going
it.
To do that?
Like,
and Will
it.
Jordan scores from it. And it's just like, I was just like, man, oh man. But anyway, I'm looking forward to Richie doing it for the All Blacks because clearly they don't want to defend it.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Dave Rennie's been watching.
Well, man, some of his. I think they'll be focusing on defence, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, a little bit later on. Now you mentioned that yellow card to Will Jordan. There were a few incidents over the weekend where people were scratching their heads about what on earth is this. There was the Lomax yellow v red. Is that as obvious as it seems? That looked like a red card based on everything we've seen this year.
Yeah, I just think if you go to Damien, and I just think the understanding was if you go near the head, it's gone. You know, you even seen it in the NRL now. I think the Broncos player on the weekend like didn't do anything wrong. Like the guy was almost tripping. I can't remember who they were playing, but and fell into his shoulder, but he got sent off.
Yeah.
Which shows that even both, sometimes the NRL's looked at rugby going, oh, that's a bit placid. But now both games are sort of evening up. And I suppose that's where we saw that understanding is any direct contact with the head is going to be a red card. And I'm sure they'll have a review, as we always talk about. Refs are human. And I hate bagging on refs because it's a tough job. But I do think they got that one wrong.
Yeah, it was weird. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I was the same. And I think you look at how Damien got treated with his one and you look at the severity of his as opposed to maybe Tyrell's. And Goldie and I were discussing, because we were working that game, the Hurricanes game, and Goldie actually made a really good point for a guy that didn't make too many tackles in his career. But it was, he sort of said, the thumb down is a way of looking at these tackles. So if I'm going in to make a genuine attempt to wrap his arms, his thumb is going to be up and trying to make a wrap with his arms on the tackle. Whereas, as opposed to if his thumb's down, leading with the shoulder, it's not the guy straight in the Swede. And that was what was pretty obvious with Tyrell's in the weekend. There was no chance that his arm was ever going to come around and wrap, as opposed to maybe Damien's, where he slipped up, got a shoulder straight to the guy's head, but he was obviously in the motion of trying to wrap his arms. So it's just the inconsistencies, and I think you're right, Chip. It is bloody hard for these referees to interpretate the laws around, you know, a guy, he's falling down as opposed to what Damien did. All these things, and trying to take intent into account. Like, you can't say that so Tyrell went out there to try and knock this guy with his shoulder. There's no way that he had it. I mean, it's not him and try to knock the guy out with a punch. That's different. Then there's real intent to try to hurt the fella. He's just trying to make a tackle. So, but I think the consequence of shoulder to head, we've got to try to eliminate it from the game because too well, Chibber, the concussion, it's having a massive play in guys' careers. And if we can eliminate that, then I think the more we can bring that tackle height down and make sure that guys are using their arms to wrap, then we take the head out of the equation. If any contact to the head, it's pretty straight. It's got to be a red card.
What if it's head on head?
Well, with Tupouvai,
that one was confusing for me.
I found that one confusing because I don't know where his head's supposed to go.
I know. That's it. Where are you meant to put your sweep?
I thought maybe a penalty, like even a penalty was harsh, and then he got yellowed. I was like, oh, that's tough. But yeah, it was. again, it's just I think, again,
it's an interpretation of that rule, eh?
But it's a perception of they've seen attacking players' head have direct contact. Yeah. And whether it's head on head, I suppose what they're saying there, it is the defenders.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, well, that's the defender's obligation to dip their height and wrap their arms and get it a height that is not going to bring the head into play, even if it is your head on his head. Because it looked funny to get yellow carded for that, I must admit. But they're trying to set a standard so that they can bring about change. So that's, again, I do want to stress about not bagging refs, but it is a little bit. I think the weekend did bring about, I don't think beforehand there was inconsistency, but I think the weekend did bring about inconsistency, but maybe some instances that we haven't seen before, especially the head-on-head.
Yeah.
Like, that was, that I hadn't seen before.
Is that even a law? Like, is there anything in the law
that mentions that? Well, I think it's direct contact with the head. So yeah. It doesn't say that it can't be head-on-head. They're just riffing the law to them.
Yeah.
I think the other side of it is when we're going to get to these pick and go situations close to the line where a guy's diving, say, half to try gain 30 centimetres, and as the defender, you've got to try and get under a guy that might only be 2 feet off the ground. And I don't know how you're meant to do that without either your head smacking into his head or your shoulder smacking into his head. So there's horse, of course, the sort of stuff. And I think you're right, Chibber. It's just how they interpret it, and they're obviously trying to make a statement around it. And I think we all agree we don't want people suffering from concussions, and they've got to do their part. But how they do that, I don't know. That's a discussion for another day, because I don't have an answer for
it. But I think
too confusing for me at the moment.
I think like us as rugby players, or anything, any job you do, you review it, and then you make adjustments as you go, and that's what I think they'll do.
But this takes me to my bugbear, and Joey, I go on about this all the time. You know, when you look at the reviews, it's always about making sure that the defensive player is getting into the right position, making sure they're not going too high. And whether it's this or whether it's high ball situations or whatever, when are we at some stage going to put some onus on the attacking player to start looking after themselves and the person in front of them? Because it seems to me like the attacking player in any situation on a rugby field can get away with whatever they want. And, you know, when there's a clash of heads like that, where two heads have come up against each other, the defensive player is the guy who seemed to be reckless. But your heads both ended up in the same place.
Yeah, and I think because what they're trying to say there, I suppose, is the attacking player is remaining upright, and it's the obligation on the defending player to drop his body height to make the tackle.
How often do we see falling bodies, things like that? They talk about mitigating circumstances, but... You know, it does seem unfair that the defensive player is always the one. And
I think
the
they have to
team.
Make a stance, though. They have to make a stance on one side or the other. Otherwise, it's just going to be, you can argue it either way all the time. So I think the way they've got it at the moment is fine, because everyone understands that. It's just making little adjustments on the interpretation as they go, as new
things. I think
that's
the problem, though. I don't think everyone understands it, because I certainly don't as a... Now, a broadcaster, I've got no idea what rule they're going to interpret week to week. And these mitigating circumstances change week to week. So we just need, I think what you're alluding to, Ross is just getting some clarity. Like, what's wrong? What was so bad about Damien's as opposed to Tyrell's?
But that's Tupu's. But that's what I'm saying.
You don't know.
That's what I'm saying. They'll review it and they'll probably come out and say that Tyrell's probably should have been a red and that, mate, when have we ever seen a head-on-head tackle? Like, I can't remember it. I've been around a long time. I've never seen that, and I've never seen someone yellow carded for it. But that's what I mean. It's an area that they're trying to focus on, and they're going to have to grow as it goes. Yeah, I've got my refs back here. your broadcaster pulling. And can I just say, from a point of view, this is the best, the thumb up, thumb down, that's the best chat I've ever seen you bring on TV. There you go.
I can't claim that either, mate. That was you gave it to Goldie.
But
I said to him.
I know, but that is great.
You can't be talking tackle technique.
That is great, though.
That's going to change the game.
That makes great sense.
Send that to World Rugby, and suddenly it'll be called the Wheeler Rule.
And Goldie will be...
And you could say the coat hanger's all good now, boys.
Yeah.
You get a coach like Craig Bellamy coming in and coming up with some obscure bloody tackling technique.
I just tried to compliment him, and he just goes and ruins it.
Yeah.
I'm just forward thinking, the evolution of the thumb up tackle.
Let's get back to some positive stuff. Obviously, we've got a big game this weekend. So often, the final game can offer, you know, final selections in an All Black jersey. A guy who pulls out something out of nowhere and jumps up ahead of the next guy based on what he did in the biggest game of the year. Do we have any players in these two teams who are fringe All Blacks who might not be on Ian Foster's piece of paper now, but are when the team gets named next week?
Oh, I reckon there's a couple. Look, there's some guys that are dead cert, but there's a couple that I think have got the opportunity to do so. I've got a couple from the Blues. One guy that's maybe out there, but potentially could be on the radar if there's an injury, is Gerard Kelly-Tuioti. I'd love to know Joey's thoughts on this, but I just think he's really good ball in hand. He's really good defensively, physical, so he's got that, but he's a student of the game. You know, his preparation, he runs Blues defence and attack lineouts with Paddy. Like, he knows that side of his game. You know, he's really bone deep in his prep, which I really like. And that's what you need at that next standard.
You need to say bone deep in Steve Hansen's voice.
Bone deep.
Bone deep.
So I think if he keeps playing, like, he's had a great season, and he's just, like, his game is just the best I've ever seen it. And I don't want to lose him for Harbour, but, you know, could potentially do so. Alex Hodgman, I think he had a great game. He's obviously been suspended, probably hasn't had the form he'd like. He was in the All Blacks, performed really well for the All Blacks, had a great game last week. A big performance really brings him back into the picture. Tom Robinson, if his head's right, I think he has to be considered.
Yeah.
And I'll jump on the Highlanders, but you'll be able to jump on more of these, but I'll go quickly through them so I don't steal Joey's thunder. But Jonah Nareki, obviously we've spoken about before. Josh Ioane and Mitch Hunt, I think there could be a potential opportunity, whether not in the original squad, but if there's an injury or something, those boys, if they perform well in a big occasion, big stage.
Yeah.
I'll touch on your point around Gerard Kelly-Tuioti, mate. I was a huge fan of his last year, and I think he's put in two consistent seasons. The interesting thing for me was he was probably one of our four blocks last season in Super Rugby Aotearoa, but missed somehow the North Island selection, which I still can't understand how he missed out on that selection. But he was probably one of the blocks in the country at that stage. So that was interesting for me. And that I took that maybe they stand a little bit too old for that next World Cup cycle, which I've known that, Jabari, as you know, because I think if guys are good enough now and they're playing at that highest sort of tier of player and at a world-class level, then you should pick them regardless of the mission, regardless of whether you see them being able to make the next World Cup. So I think that might be counting against him. But I've loved his presence in that blue side. Now running line out with Paddy and doing a fantastic job. And obviously, Willie alluded to their work in defence, their defensive line out being the best in the competition this year. So he can just head off. But the other thing that might count against him is I understand he might be heading offshore as well. So I don't know if that'll count against
him. We've seen flip arounds before.
Yeah. There was a sign in the Eden Park crowd, wasn't there? There was a sign in the stadium on the weekend saying, thank you very much, Gerard. And that was like, oh.
It's all right. We've seen flip arounds. We'll just start it. We'll start pumping it up here.
If you swing an All Blacks jersey in front of someone, they'll change their mind.
I'll tell you what, and Harbour definitely need him to hang around, mate. Gee whiz,
They do, but just on that, just on him, though, before we move on, is look at Dave Rennie. Tamani selected, 34. I know we're going to touch on the Wallaby squads in depth, but picking on form, current form, pick international sides on current form. I'm big on that, Joey. Sorry to jump in there.
Good on you, mate.
Good analysis,
Blues,
Joey.
Thanks, mate. Needs to have a massive performance is Akere Ioane, if he's to be considered. I think you alluded to Tom Robinson. Obviously, he's the form six, but his obviously didn't look good in the weekend. If Akere is to put himself off that picture of that All Black frame and the makeup of that loose forward trio, because to me, bar Hoskins, there's been no one really screaming out, I'm the number eight for this All Black side. I'm the next best thing. So the makeup of that loose forward trio and who they pick, I think,
You've just insulted Ross.
Interesting.
I didn't hear you scream Luke Jacobson for a
you've
second.
You've just insulted Ross.
Eh?
I love Luke Jacobson. No, I really love Luke Jacobson. And I think I love him because he can play all three. So competent in every position. But is that the solution? Picking? Are they going to just pick these utility guys like another, like Artie Savia, for instance, he can play all three. Hoskins can play six and eight.
He's a genuine eight. He's a genuine eight. Hoskins is a genuine eight. I agree.
Is Akira a six? Is he an eight? Where's he going to fit in? I think if he can have a big performance, he'll put himself right into the picture. And the one guy that I had for the Highlanders was Jonah Nariki. I just think it's all on the pole of winger that we want for the All Blacks. And I know you guys have talked about Jonah already this season in your pods. And I know that traditionally the U.S. have gone for that big bruising winger that always wins game line. But the thing I love about Jonah Nariki is he's got the complete skill set. For a winger, obviously not the biggest guy, but geez, he plays big. He uncanny ability to always beat the first defender. He's got a great left foot. He's turns up as that a lot of left wingers wouldn't turn up as second receiver, got the ability to throw the wide ball, has a huge work rate, and probably I'd just about say he's probably one of the best defensives in New Zealand at the moment. A great ability to shut down time and space to paint a picture that he's got everything covered, but then also pull back when he doesn't to sell two different pitches. And then if teams think that they can skip past him, uncanny ability of taking those intercepts. So I think he's a guy, even small in stature, he's the way he plays so big, and he's so important to what this Highlanders team does.
Look, we've spoken at length about Jonah, and all those are relevant. Probably one area is the old contestables. Something the Highlanders don't go to a lot is the contestable kick. They go for more of the tactical kick, but his chip and chase game as well, I know like it's a little bit old school, but he's so effective in that little attacking chip and chase game. And I agree, like that try that he set up for Aaron Smith, like it was like he was on fast forward when he injected into the line. Like the change of pace, he literally looks like he's on fast forward. It's like, it's ridiculous. And then he sets up Aaron on the inside, but I totally agree. I thought there was maybe some other guys, you know, that might get into that All Black environment due to having played in there previously and coming into form, like Sevu, and we spoke about a few others. But, I mean, another big performance on the big occasion that leads to a Highlanders win, he would definitely have to be knocking the door down.
So you both would like him to see him in the starting 11 jersey? The different question is, do you think Ian Foster sees him in a starting 11 jersey?
I don't know.
I think that's what I was alluding to, with that profile of Fozzie's after. Does he want that sort of complete player that is always on the ball, or does he just want that big bruising type of winger that's going to smash through brick walls, gain line, take the first carry off line, set piece, do all that sort of stuff? Or does he want a winger that's going to get busy on it, turn up around the rucks, running off Nuggie's shoulder, turning up in places that you probably don't expect to see your left winger turning up? It's all going to be around how he wants to play the game, and I think that'll depend on what left winger he's going to go with.
They have done that in the past. Like George Bridge has gone at left wing, Rico's been there. Caleb's been the latest one that's been the big bruising one, but he's also very good at his work rate off the ball from his sevens background. Sevens was really good for that aspect of his game. Jonah's obviously got that aspect. So I don't think the expectation of Ian Foster is that his 11 isn't doing that work off the ball. So I don't think it plays against him. And I agree, sort of like seven away, they might look small, but man, they're rock solid. Milani Nanai was the same as well. Try tackling them. They're like rocks, and you just get bunted off, and you end up, well, I did anyway. Don't know about you, Joey, did you?
Mate, I'd run away as far away from those blokes as possible because I'd know they'd embarrass me. I'd end up tripping over myself like a big giraffe.
Yeah. But he's got to be in with a shot. A big performance in a big game.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. A big performance in a big game, big occasion, that's test match level stuff. So you deliver on that stage, you're then sending a message to the All Black coaches like, the big occasion doesn't unsettle me, I can still perform.
And like they showed with Caleb last year, they are willing to roll the dice on someone, if they see that.
Mm.
Caleb was a young guy who'd barely played any Super Rugby. Next thing you know, he's a star for the All Blacks on the wing.
Mm.
They're willing to take that chance if you show them what you've got.
Yeah, they've done it with Bridgie a few years before and he overtook Rico. I think he's a real chance.
Oh, yeah. Let's go through some lists then. We've got down Hedner on this piece of paper. Starting 15s. Let's do it quickly so it doesn't labour too long. Run me through. Joey, you start us. Run us through your starting 15. What does the All Blacks starting 15 look like for you?
Oh, good Lord.
I've gone off us here on the loose head. Dane Coles at hooker. Just edging out Cody Taylor. I just love Colesy's little bit of niggle and that little bit of edge that we always see from him at test match footy. He's just got an uncanny ability to get under opposition skin. And Nepo Lalala on the tight head, purely ring ability with Offer and Nepo. There's a big worry, I think, around we're going bar injury, so obviously, if Moody's sweet, I was picking for this first test. If Moody's sweet, Moody comes in there if there's no injuries, but in the loose head. But I'm a bit worried about the fitness levels of those Blues props, Chibber. I'd like to see them do a little bit more around the field. Those two would be, for me, the best scrummages at the moment, Offer and Nepo. The locks, pretty simple. Two world-class guys in Scott Barrett and Sam Whitelock. Loose forward, Shannon Frizzell, barring injury, Shannon Frizzell gets the 6 jersey and Sam Kane gets the 7 jersey for me. And I'm going with Hutchinson 2-2 and 8. I just think this guy for the next World Cup is just going to keep getting better and better. And we haven't even seen the best of him yet. He's a brilliant athlete, brilliant in the line-out. Could probably, maybe if there's any criticism around him, maybe around his physical and defence, but I mean, he's just going to keep getting better and better the more he plays. Aaron Smith at 9. Richie Mwanga just gets the nod just because of his form at present over Bodie at 10. On the left wing, I've gone with Jonah Nariki just purely for the fact of him getting better. I just love his work rate. I love the way he plays games. So he's got the Fred Havili at 12. Lennart Brown. We wouldn't want him in the midfield. Anton Lennart Brown in the midfield, partnering him. And I'm going to go Will Jordan on the right wing. uncanny ability to create something from nothing. He's just that sort of player where it turns rocks into diamonds really, really quickly. So he gets the nod. And then Jordy Barrett at fullback for me. That's my best for the moment, mate.
11 uncapped players in the Wallabies squad. That's fresh. But when you look at the people who are unavailable, my goodness, Pattaya, Vunivalu, Gordon, Parisi, like, they've got a superstar backline, unavailable through injury.
They've been unlucky with their timing of their injuries, this naming of this Australian side. But the thing I always am wary of with the Australians is they always have the to pick a really, really good 23. On paper, you look at that squad and you go, oh, there's all this, freshness or uncapped players. But if you look at their 23, they're still going to be a really competitive side. It's just injuries that are gonna hurt them. The one that I was really disappointed with was Parisi out of those. I think he's been a shining light for that side and got an uncanny ability to break teams open with either brute force or a little bit of speed and subtlety to get on the outside of defenders. And the other thing I like about him, he's got that swag. He's got that real competitive edge. He loves the competition. He loves that in-your-face confrontation. And we saw it got the best out of him. When they played the Crusaders, he was on another planet. Like, his performance was phenomenal in that game. So I'm really disappointed for him because I would have loved to have seen him have a crack at Arena because I think he's got the skill set and the ability, well-coached under Dave Rennie, to go to a whole nother level.
I reckon their midfield will be fine, though, without him. Like, Ikitau from the Brumbies is exceptional. Fuketi, the second five from the Waratahs as well. You know, Dave Rennie spoke so highly of him whenever the team was named. And he just said he's all about setting up other players. You know, a lot of Parisi's success is actually on the back of the hard work and the positioning that Fuketi does. Yeah. To allow them to be successful. So I think they'll be a force. I mean, Simone can't even get in there, and I thought he was having a great great year for the Brumbies. You know, there's so many guys that are missing out in that back line, but it's going to be off the back of sharpening up defence. Like Dave Rennie yesterday said, you know, we know we can attack. You know, the Aussie sides have had no problem scoring points, but we haven't been able to stop them. So a lot of their camp is going to be focusing on defence. He made one comment here. I wrote it down because I was just like, man, if you're reading this as a player, you know you're going in to make a lot of tackles in camp. He goes, we've got good men in our group who, when they cross the chalk, we want to know they become different creatures, aggressive and competitive. I think that a big part of defending is wanting to go out and physically dominate and create opportunities for us to tack off. So it needs to be a big part of our DNA. So it's just like he's picked guys that he wants to become absolute, like, different sort of specimens as soon as, you know, that Swinton mindset. Mm. Controlled, though. You know, like, you don't want to be giving red cards or yellow cards, but that physical dominance with accuracy and defence and that breakdown dominance is going to be such a big part, and it will need to be a big part against France. And that's what he
sounds like. A similar media release to when he picked his first Chiefs side, mate, and then obviously what he did with them.
Yeah,
they used to their training sessions were obviously notorious for being extremely competitive, punch ups galore. So, yeah, that to me, yeah, speaks volumes, Chivo, of what these boys can expect is testing themselves. To what will be probably sometimes harder than what a game is.
Oh, I'd say so, but I think the type of player, the type of new forward and player and the other players that have played before, the older players coming back, I think they're well suited and ready for that. So I'm really excited for this series. I think it's going to be an absolute doozy.
So do you build a Wallabies attacking style on top of regular defence? Is that what we're going to see from Rennie? Or what will we see as far as attacking style is concerned?
I think there'll be a bit of kick strategy in there, attacking kick strategy, and playing that territory base. And then I think they've shown enough in terms of their players to have instinctive attack as well. So, but I think their biggest focus is stopping points. You know, winning test match footy is about, you know, nullifying the opposition scoring and then taking your points when on offer. So building that scoreboard pressure, you know, having good forward dominance, having that set piece. You know, they're not called test matches. It's a step up from Super Rugby. You're not going to just run over the try line like we've seen throughout Trans-Tasman. It's going to be, especially against France, like, these guys are well conditioned. They perform really well in Six Nations. They've got a bit of flair about them, but they've also got a bit of steel defensively. So it's going to be about building into games and finding that attack. But I think it's going to be off the basis of defence. And I think a lot of his messaging yesterday was about turning defence into attack. So winning the breakdown, winning collisions, setting a presence, making our presence felt on the rugby field through defence, and then from that, building our attack.
Chiefs mark too, like you said.
Yeah, I think so, mate. I think so. This side, that knowing Dave Rennie's mindset and how he likes his squad to play and how he likes his players to I think, reflects in his selection, and it doesn't matter. I think what I've liked is that he's picked the best available to him, whichever he has on maybe promise or ability in the future. He's picked on form and he's picked on toughness. So, yeah, I think we're going to miss a really competitive series, but, yeah, that French side is pretty and I'm sure they'll send down a pretty stack, and it'll be a real good test for this Wallabies outfit.
I think the key, though, is what I said, is the smarts as well. Like, you can be tough and you can be angry and all that, but you've got to keep it at a level where you can still stick in your systems and nail your role, be connected with your mate, cool, calm, and within the parameters of the rules. So there is a balance there, and you've got to get that right. Best players get it right.
So the pass mark is a series win. Whitewash, what is the pass mark here for this team going up against France?
Oh, I think the French go on as favourites, don't they?
I would have thought so.
Yeah, I just think just because of the form and the time they've had together, but they obviously had a few dips and you know, probably on track to win the Six Nations, but didn't, you know, dipped at crucial times. So they're not you know, peaking, but we've spoken about at length that's perfect for their 2023. So they're learning a little bit, coming down here, learning a little bit about the Southern Hemisphere flair. But, you know, Australia is still rebuilding, 11 new caps, 3 games in 11 days. So that there's a little bit of attrition there, war of attrition. So squad depth is going to be key. So, look, you would hate to see a whitewash for either side.
Squad depth could be the key period for France, because you never know who's going to turn up. Like, when I say, I mean that by who the clubs are going to release to be selected for this game.
Yeah, so I think that'll be the judge of it. Look, I think a 2-1 victory to the Wallabies would be massive.
Yeah. You happy with that?
No, I think I don't think we're going to see a whitewash at all. I think if the Wallabies can win one of the three, then I reckon they'll say that's a pass mark with the amount of injuries that they've got. I agree with Chibber going on to that series as the favourites. But all in, as you alluded to, Ross, on who is available for selection, because if they bring their best squad down here, I think they will have the ability to whitewash the Wallabies, but I don't think all those guys are going to be available.
And they'll make a big, big impact. So it's been a big week for the Wallabies finding out their test team. We'll find out next week about the All Blacks. But first of all, we've got the Super Rugby game, the final, and of course, we both know who you think is going to win. Give us a score. How close is this thing? And why do they win it?
17-15. Why do they win it? Oh, I think tactical kicking will win it on the day. The team with the best tactical kicking and has the discipline to stick to that for 80 minutes will win it. and then decisions on penalties. And I think that long-distance lever of Zahn Sullivan's could come in crucial for a long-distance penalty late.
I'm going to go 24-21. Clark Dermody is going to come up with three absolute gems of special lineouts to get three more tries, all converted. Then Mitch Hunt's going to bang a penalty from 45 on the angle to win it in the 82nd minute. That's my prediction.
The fairy tale's been written. The Highlanders win another one. There's another documentary-style story available. And the Highlanders walk away with Super Rugby title number two. That's sounds good.
That's the dream, mate.
Sounds good. Yeah. I wonder who's playing Joey Wheeler in that movie.
We will see.
We'll see.
We will see. The underdog Blues will come up against the giants that are the Highlanders.
And on that note, Joey Wheeler down in Eden, thank you very much for coming on board at the last minute, mate. Hope you're in much better shape right now than Bryn Hall is. I'm sure that there is no doubt about that. And as ever, James Parsons, see you again next week.
Look forward to it.
Thank you for watching. Catch us on the weekend on both Sky Sport and Rugby Pass with the big game in Super Rugby Trans-Tasman. It is the Blues versus the Highlanders from Eden Park, the final.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.